Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, July 27th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The MDCT appears to be preparing for the 2018 general elections after boycotting recent parliamentary by-elections calling for electoral reforms.
We are not waiting for the reforms to be put on the table for us to prepare. So the MDC is preparing for the 2018 election.
The Supreme Court today ruled that employers are not obliged to pay workers' housing, school fees and other allowances unless they are part of an existing collective bargaining agreement.
Isn't it, I think you understand that even supervisors and some other grades, they are giving those allowances. And the grades that we are representing, none of the grades that we are representing are getting those allowances.
The Zimbabwe International Book Fair kicked off today with authors, publishers and booksellers bemoaning piracy, which they said is affecting their operations.
Piracy is not just piracy. Piracy is a theft. You are stealing from the author. You are stealing from the market.
And a Harare magistrate has ordered the immediate release of three civil society leaders who were arrested Saturday.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
MDCT President Morgan Tsvangirai has held numerous rallies throughout the country, drumming up support for his strategy dubbed No Reforms, No Elections. This strategy was used in recent parliamentary by-elections that saw ZANU-PF romping to victory in 14 of them, which the party boycotted. However, Tsvangirai's party officials now tell Studio 7 that they are confident that come 2018, electoral reforms will be there and are therefore preparing for the polls. The latest report that the party is now preparing for elections surprised many who were of the impression that without any electoral reforms, they were not going to the polls. The party says as part of efforts to drum up support ahead of the elections, a delegation will be heading to Europe to brief Western governments and party supporters on the party's preparations. In what appeared to be a confirmation of the United States' growing displeasure at the reforms, at the No Reforms, No Elections strategy, Grigory Simpkins, a director in the subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights and International Organizations, last month hit out at the MDCT saying, opposition parties cannot criticize a system that they were not part of. However, Party Secretary General Douglas Muonzora, when asked to clarify the issue, told Studio 7 that they do not want to talk about what would happen if there were no reforms by 2018 because they have no doubt that the reforms will be there.
The position of the MDC is that it is preparing for elections. But as you know, we will not participate in elections without reform. We are not waiting for those reforms to be put on the table for us to prepare. So the MDC is preparing for the 2018 election, well knowing that in the interim period, it will force the government kicking or screaming into implementing electoral reforms. So we have begun our preparations to lay the groundwork for these four elections. But we are going to do these elections after the reforms. And we are confident that we are going to push the government to implement these reforms.
But what if you push and push, but the government does not make any reforms? Are you still going to participate?
In the program that we are embarking on, defeat is not on our agenda. In fact, we are going to force those reforms. It's not up to government to give us those reforms or not.
But in the event that there are no reforms, what happens?
There is not going to be an eventuality like that. It's not in our mentality to think of a failure. We are not going to fail.
That was Douglas Muonzora, the MDCT Secretary General. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Political analyst George Mkwananzi tells Studio 7 that the MDCT should, in the first place, make it clear what electoral reforms it's talking about to be taken seriously.
Now, this is a turnaround on their part, a turn where they want to say to the people in the world that they hope that reforms would have been, you know, brought about by 2018. That is not going to happen, and it is high time that they speak honestly to the public and to the members of the international community that they were still smarting from a heavy defeat that they experienced in 2013, rather than lying to the world and say that they know there would be reforms by then. Who is going to bring those reforms? When you negotiate for reforms, you need to have a certain leverage, you know, in terms of your bargaining strength, which leverage they lost during the GNU.
But what did you understand by the strategy, no reforms, no elections? What did it mean to you?
It didn't mean anything at all. For as long as the specific, you know, reforms that they expected to see were not highlighted. We don't know exactly what they want to see. If you just give a blank out statement and say that no reforms, no elections, and you don't tell us exactly what you want to see reformed, we just think that you are bluffing.
That was George Mkwananzi, a political analyst. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg in South Africa.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai says there is need for another revolution to unseat the current nationalist leadership of President Robert Mugabe. Addressing hundreds of his party supporters at Matsika village in Buhera, Tsvangirai said Zimbabweans should be focused in order to effect social, economic and political change in the country. He urged MDC members to register as voters en masse to avoid and limit chances of election rigging by ZANU-PF in national elections.
In a related development, the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, or ZESTN, says the continued police presence inside polling stations should be addressed together with several other reforms that compromise the credibility of the country's electoral processes. In a statement today after observing the Mudzi West by-election last week, ZESTN said many people do not feel very comfortable casting their votes in the presence of police officers. ZESTN also said it observed an overwhelming number of assisted voters in the Mudzi by-election, adding the Zimbabwe Election Commission should allow civil society groups to engage the public in voter education. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached ZESTN director Rindai Chifunde Vava for more details.
We feel that there is a need for voter education, as we noted a huge number of voters turned away and voters who needed assistance. And we also realize that if voter education is targeted when there are by-elections, ZESTN feels that it should be a continuous exercise, which should be a comprehensive voter education program, not just targeted for by-elections. We also noted that most polling stations where we observed only ZANU-PF had deployed polling agents, and we feel that perhaps other contesting parties should also train and deploy of party agents as provided in the electoral law, so that they take advantage of this provision, make sure that their representatives are well-trained and they know their duties and responsibilities.
You are also suggesting that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission should engage with the civil society in terms of voter education. Have you ever communicated this directly to the commission?
Yes, indeed. And we also have been invited by ZEC to take part in voter education programs. But as I indicated, they are periodic and targeted for by-elections. What we are calling for is a continuous exercise, which doesn't need to wait for the by-election. But at least once you are accredited, you should be able to go and conduct voter education in all parts of the country, not just that specific area where a by-election is taking place.
That was ZESN director Rindai Chifunde Vava on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
The Supreme Court today ruled that employers are not obliged to pay workers' housing, school fees, and other allowances unless they are part of an existing collective bargaining agreement signed by parties to the contract. This follows a 7-year outstanding dispute between the National Railways of Zimbabwe and its workers. The dispute moved from the Labour Office, Arbitrator, Labour Court, and eventually the Supreme Court. Finally, Supreme Court Justices Fernandez Yambi, Elizabeth Gwaunza, and Antonia Guvava unanimously ruled that the court cannot impose conditions on negotiated contracts. Justice Yambi said in her judgment, both the Labour Court and the arbitrator ought to have found that the allowances not having been negotiated by the parties and thereof not forming part of their collective bargaining agreement were not a right or entitlement for appropriation of the respondents. General Secretary Kenneth Nemachena of the Zimbabwe Amalgamated Railway Workers Union tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the situation for NRZ workers is desperate.
As we speak, I think you understand that even supervisors and some other grades, they are giving those allowances. And the grades that we are representing, none of the grades that we are representing are getting those allowances.
How are you graded?
The labor represents from A1 up to C5, whereas management is from D up to F, and they are getting those allowances. And they also, as you see our reference, it was like those allowances can be negotiated with the employer in terms of the Labor Act. And if the employer refused and there was a dispute, it was referred to the designated agents for conciliation. After conciliation, it went for arbitration. After arbitration, it went to the Labor Court. And the Labor Court, it went to the Supreme Court.
But why is it that you are demanding housing allowances when NRZ is even failing to give you your monthly salaries?
That case was referred long way back in 2008.
What is the situation like now at NRZ? Are you receiving your salaries on time?
No, we are not receiving the salaries on time. As I speak, I think employees are getting the salaries for 2014. That is July 2014. And also those salaries are slashed by 20%.
What is the reason for this? What is the company telling you?
They are saying of the economic difficulties, the economic challenges. That is what the company said.
That was Kenneth Nemachena, General Secretary of the Zimbabwe Amalgamated Railway Workers Union, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. NRZ Acting General Manager Louis Mukwandi told Parliament last month that the company suffered a cumulative deficit of $17 million for the 5 months to May, as revenue income for the period was $44 million against the expenditure of $61 million.
A Harare magistrate today ordered the immediate release of three civil society leaders who were arrested Saturday after finding that the state had violated the constitution. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Combined Harare Residents Association Director Mfundo Mlilo, Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition's Programs Manager Nixon Nyikadzino, and Deputy National Chairperson of the Occupy Africa Unity Square Pressure Group, Dirk Frey, who were arrested outside the magistrate's court on Saturday, were arraigned before a Harare magistrate today, facing charges of violating the Public Order and Security Act and the Protected Areas Act, after the charges were read to the accused by State Attorney Aida Maromo. Defense Counsel Gift Mtisi challenged the placement of the accused on remand, arguing that Mlilo, Nyikadzino and Frey were being held illegally. Mtisi submitted that the state had violated the national constitution by failing to bring the accused persons to court within 48 hours, as stipulated in Zimbabwe's supreme law. But the state council opposed Mtisi's application, saying the accused persons were brought to court before the 48-hour period had lapsed and were ordered by the prosecution to return to the police station to correct some typographical errors on the charge sheet. However, Mtisi argued that the trio should be released because they had not been arraigned before a magistrate at the expiry of the stipulated period, even though they were brought to court before that time period had expired. In his ruling, Magistrate Tendai Mawe found that the state had violated a section of the Constitution that he said is explicit that accused people should appear before a competent court before the constitutionally stipulated time frame had lapsed. Mtisi welcomed the court's ruling and urged authorities to adhere to the National Governing Charter whenever they were dealing with suspects.
Obviously, the state will be vindictive because it has failed to comply with the Constitution. It has violated my client's rights, so it wanted to take them to prison. The Constitution is clear. It says any person who be in custody of those people should release them immediately. So they should have been released prior to attending court.
Mlilo, Nyikadzino and Frey were arrested on Saturday at the magistrate's court where they had gone to hear a case of other civil society members accused of taking pictures at a protected area who were arrested Friday at the Harare Remand Prison where leaders of some non-governmental organizations had visited the jailed leaders of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Samuel Wadzai and Sten Zorwadza. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the majority of Zimbabweans don't know that they are living with tuberculosis or TB. Stay tuned to find out if you are.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The death toll is up to 18 following Sunday's bombing of the Jazeera Palace Hotel in Mogadishu by militant group Al-Shabaab.
President Barack Obama says the United States and Ethiopia are strong partners on many issues, but is urging the government to allow journalists and opposition parties to operate more freely. In a news conference today with Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, Mr. Obama praised Ethiopia's economic record, noting the country has lifted millions out of dire poverty, and said Ethiopia has played a vital role in fighting the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. Mr. Obama was in Kenya where he addressed a global economic summit, which was attended by some Zimbabweans, including Tawanda Chikosi, who told Studio 7's Marvelous Mthanga Nyawiye they are excited to explore business opportunities discussed in Nairobi.
We took a look and tried to put Zimbabwe on the map as entrepreneurs from Zimbabwe, particularly when we're having a panel discussion with people from Google, Facebook, Amazon, as well as Uber. One of the key things that we raised to them particularly was to say in most of these support systems that they are providing for Africa, Zimbabwe is always left out. So we put it to them to say what does it take for Zimbabwe to be included as well so that entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe can benefit from such initiatives and no longer have to be left out all the time.
Were there any Zimbabweans that actually presented at this conference and also how were they received?
We had Chakunda Chingonzo, who was a 22-year-old tech entrepreneur from Zimbabwe. He was actually one of the most favorite panelists because of his age as well as because of the country that he comes from, Zimbabwe. He was on the core panel with people from Google, from Facebook, from Amazon, as well as from Uber, which are very well globally recognized brands. And he did very well to represent Zimbabwe and to represent the entrepreneurs that were there as well to support him.
Do you think you'll be able to have an opportunity to utilize some of the information that you actually learned at this Global Economic Summit, looking at the state of Zimbabwe's economy and also the relationship between Zimbabwe and the U.S. itself?
We definitely will have more opportunities associated with the summit.
That was Zimbabwean Tawanda Chikosi speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mthanga Nyawiye from Nairobi, Kenya.
And a shootout at a wedding late Sunday in northern Afghanistan's Baghlan province left 21 people dead and several wounded.
A tuberculosis prevalence survey conducted recently has shown that 58% of people with TB do not know their status. According to the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease, while some of the people have TB symptoms, others do not have any, posing a public health hazard since this is a communicable disease. Our correspondent Notando Swanda has the story.
The World Health Organization says Zimbabwe was unable to meet the Millennium Development Goal targets to reduce tuberculosis prevalence and mortality rates by 50% due to a significant increase in new infections in the past decade. Tuberculosis in the country is driven by the HIV/AIDS pandemic with co-infection of 70%. The union says TB infections are a public health concern because the disease is easily communicable and people get infected sometimes without even realizing that they are at risk. The union's country director in Zimbabwe, Dr. Christopher Zishiri, told journalists who are part of the Health Journalists Association of Zimbabwe that TB is a major public health issue in Zimbabwe, and by working with the government and offering support to local communities, they can contribute to eradicate the disease. He said there is need for contact screenings so that they can trace all the people who come into contact with those who are infected.
There are so many people in our community, 58%. Probably they are coughing in the villages, they are coughing at home in the cities, but they have not been diagnosed, they don't know that they have got TB. One big issue is it's transmitted differently from HIV. Sitting just close to each other, there is somebody coughing and not knowing that they have TB. And you just breathe in a tiny micro droplet with a bag of TB, you can actually get it.
Dr. Christopher Zishiri added that the prevalence rate, especially in border towns, is worrisome, with migrants and returning residents not accessing medication in various countries. According to Dr. Zishiri, they have embarked on a 5-year plan in partnership with the Ministry of Health and Child Care and the International Organization of Migration to reduce the TB prevalence rate in the border towns.
We are learning from pilots that have been done through IOM. They have done some border initiatives where they look at all those people who are being either deported in big, and they are offering the screening tests and they are offering tests for TB as they come in. I think it's a good standard. If you look at countries like the UK, countries like Australia, when people are coming into their countries, they screen you. They can even say go for chest x-ray before you even enter your country.
Most doctors are worried about the prevalence of the disease in the country. One of them is Dr. Charles Sandy, Deputy Director for HIV/AIDS and TB Program in the Ministry of Health, who says the highest prevalence rates are in the Matabeleland and Midlands regions due to a highly mobile population. He says government needs to allocate more resources for fighting TB infections in the two regions as they bear the brunt of the TB burden in the country.
The patients in rural areas are disadvantaged because they have to walk long distances to get health services. And to achieve this, we are establishing new laboratory services in all districts.
Bulawayo resident Rita Sengwayo says HIV and AIDS stigmatization is one of the major reasons why people prefer to die silently of TB, as in most people's minds, the two are always interlinked.
In the beginning, it was made so important that if you have TB, most likely you have HIV. So that fear made people not go freely and test for TB.
Another resident, Nomakuku Nkomo, believes that Zimbabwe's current harsh economic environment has made it impossible for local clinics to follow up on infected residents.
I think the government should go back to revisiting people that have had TB in the homes, follow up, find out who else has had that disease and if there's anybody else who's had that disease or not. And I think it's very important that that's a way of finding out if it's spreading through families.
Although Zimbabwe is ranked 17th out of the world's 22 TB burden countries in the world, the Matabeleland regions border South Africa and Botswana, which rank 2nd and 8th respectively. Reporting for Studio 7 in Bulawayo, this is Notando Spanda.
The Zimbabwe International Book Fair kicked off today with authors, publishers and booksellers bemoaning piracy, which they said was affecting their operations, resulting in revenue losses. Reporter Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
The fair kicked off with an endeavor which brought together academics, authors, booksellers and publishers who were exploring ways of promoting a good reading culture in Zimbabwe, as well as creating synergies in publishing and marketing books. The endeavor heard that new technologies such as the internet had disrupted ways through which publishers and booksellers conducted their businesses, and there was now need for authors to harness new technologies to their advantage. Author and bookseller Milton Kamwenda said everyone in the book industry must explore fresh ways of remaining relevant in this age of new technologies.
Piracy is not just piracy. Piracy is a theft. You are stealing from the author, you are stealing from the market, and you are stealing from the industry and stealing from the economy. So any work of art, any work of production, any work of an author, so long as it is not rewarded in a just and an equitable manner, that kills the economy.
He said book piracy is seriously affecting all in the book industry and must be stopped. But College Press Samuel Ndanga said while new technologies had affected the books industry, schools were still buying books from authorized dealers.
As publishers, our main market is the schools market. And usually, because of the nature of the exams and the like, they rely more on the textbooks because they are written to the current syllabus. When you go onto the internet, it's more general, yes, for additional information.
ZIBF Director Obey Vute said, despite the economic hardships, the book fair had taken off well and attendance was pleasing.
Whatever is being discussed here is to make sure we reshape the agenda going forward for the book industry. If you look at the topics at ZIBF in about 2015 this year, very engaging. And most of them are forward-looking. The idea is that we don't want to preoccupy ourselves with what is happening right now, because a book is something, is a product that can last time. A product is one that brings knowledge, which means basically our theme for this year is basically to highlight that you cannot grow an economy without knowledge.
The endeavor continues tomorrow when delegates will look at various topics such as book piracy prevention methods, copyright law, and safeguarding intellectual property and digital publishing, among other issues. Exhibition of books and other material will start on Wednesday at the Harare Gardens. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Still on the book fair, Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira speaks with writer Grace Mutandwa, who hopes the book fair will help struggling local writers to market their books outside Zimbabwe.
The situation in the country, economically speaking, is very difficult. When the economy is not doing so well, it affects a whole lot of things, including the writing of books, the publishing of books. When you want to write a book, there's a lot of research that's required. So at times, it's not easy to be able to conduct the research that you want to conduct within the amount of time that you might have set for yourself. If you say you want to write a book within 2 years, it might actually take you more than 2 years. I've actually been speaking to somebody over the past few days who has been researching about the media, the Zimbabwean media, the state of the Zimbabwean media. And he's still doing that research. He has been doing it for the past 5 years. And this is a person who is based outside the country, who is actually in a much better economic situation. But he is still finding it quite difficult to move around Zimbabwe to get the people that he wants to talk to, because people are busy with the trying to earn a living.
Do you expect the book fair to help you as a writer and your colleagues in terms of, you know, trying to deal with some of these issues?
We hope the book is going to focus really on trying to assist the local book writers so that they can get a wider market, so that they can also get published. They are able to get publishing rights with various other publishers across the globe, so that they can also get translation rights. Once you get those kinds of rights sold, it's another way of making money.
That was writer Grace Mutandwa speaking with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Harare. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about indications that the MDCT is likely to participate in the 2018 general elections.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The MDCT appears to be preparing for the 2018 general elections after boycotting recent parliamentary by-elections calling for electoral reforms.
The Supreme Court today ruled that employers are not obliged to pay workers' housing, school fees, and other allowances.
Thanks. That's our broadcast.